This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
Music from Tim Stevens and his latest album, I'll Tell You Later in December, is the name of the album. And we just heard a piece called Cheerful Noise. Now, the album is a collection of 7 pieces. But what I should tell you is that Tim Stevens has been playing the piano since he was 8 years of age. Since that time, Tim has played both solo works and also in groups, including, I have read, the Red Onions Band. Back in May, we spoke to Tim about his solo release, Media Vita, which was based upon his year of composing one piece every day. With Christmas fast approaching, Tim has released a new solo recording, which is entitled, as I mentioned, I'll Tell You Later in December. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the Bent Note Studio here at Joy 94.9, Tim Stevens.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Solo piano playing. I've read that when you are teaching your students to play the piano, that you are somewhat repetitive in telling your students to sort out their sound and improvise. Why is that such an important part of learning to play the piano?
I think solo playing is very, very important, and not all my students want to do it because it's very exposed and they feel they want to be with the rhythm section and in the band and, you know, maybe a soloist playing at the front and they can comp. But if you have to take responsibility for everything at the keyboard, that teaches you a great deal more, in my opinion. And in order that you can sort out your own instrumental sound, playing on your own is one of the most important ways to do that.
Is that part of developing the musicianship of the students?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely, yeah. It is. Totally. Because the sound is what should really come first. You've got to have a good instrumental sound.
Do you find that the students are reluctant to jump into it purely because they're concerned that people will hear them play things that they don't like?
That the students don't like, yeah, or the people don't like?
Yeah, they don't like what they're doing. Is it a sense of, I can't do that, so I don't want anyone else to
hear?
And
they're apologising for it. Possibly that is a part of it, but they kind of, I mean, I just want them to get over that. Sorry to say.
And is there only one way to get over that, and that's to actually
do it? You've just got to do it. It's like improvising freely. A lot of them don't want to do that because they think, oh, what am I going to do? I have nothing to say. But you say, look, just play some notes, and that'll give you a context, and play some more notes and see how they go together. And the first time, see, so many people have said to me, I don't know how you improvise freely. It's just amazing. You just make it up. I mean, I tried improvising once and it was terrible. I say, well, so you tried it once. No wonder it was terrible. You should have tried it a second time and wait for it to get a bit better, you know, because you can't expect anything to happen well the first time. So improvising once, I wouldn't expect anything else. So this is the thing. I try to encourage them to discover their own ideas and to communicate with their own sounds in their head and find what they are and play them and see where they can go with them.
You also tell them to abandon the sustain pedal. In fact, I think I read that you tell them to twist their leg around the leg of the piano so they can't push the sustain pedal. Well, is that part of that same developing their musicianship and not relying upon other aspects?
I think that has to do with, a lot of students have a fear of silence. They can't stand the space between the notes. And so if there's something not happening, they feel they have to fill the space. And the sustain pedal's marvellous because there's always something happening. There's always a sound. You're safe. You've got this wash of sound. Plus now, there is a sort of fashion at the moment in that zeitgeist for a sort of washy, atmospheric thing where it's all happening nicely, softly stuff. But, I mean, I don't go for that. And I think people rely on that in the absence of better formed ideas, and I would rather they concentrate on the ideas. And I think, you know, once you take the pedal off and you listen to how the instrument sounds without it, you've just got more resources. So then you'll know when to use the pedal and when not to use the pedal, and that's just something that I think is a part of playing. I mean, there's a particular Beethoven sonata that I use where you can play it with pedal and you can actually play it completely without pedal, and it sounds quite interesting both ways, but the without pedal way to me is very much better, and the best recordings I've heard of it, there's hardly any pedal at all. But because of habit and because of not thinking too much about it, I'll just wang the pedal down and play it all the way through, and it's just not as interesting. So that's the Pastoral Sonata, and anyone who's interested in D major.
Okay. I might have to look after that for that. And in fact, I think I've got two versions at home. I'll have to go back and have a listen now and find out what they're
doing. I've got a few too, and the differences are amazing, but anyway.
So when you're doing all this, teaching the students to play in this fashion, developing their skill sets to interpret and improvise, when does it click for them that they're actually doing something that sounds worthwhile and they then start to move forward?
Well, there's no predicting that, but they do have to stick at it for a while unbroken, I think. And then will come a moment when they can suddenly think, that was all right. And possibly the next time they play, it's not so good anymore, and they're disappointed because they thought they'd got something down that was great. And the good ones, the good bits they play will become slightly more frequent as they go along, but it's never just a particular moment you got it right. There's just, as you come to terms with these questions of sound and of tack and all that sort of stuff, and knowing how long to let an idea go on before it's had its moment and needs to be relinquished for the next idea, those sorts of things, they all take time to develop. So students get that at different rates.
Is it something to do with the fact that most students learn as a classical basis to start with, and is there a sense that it's classical, you don't improvise?
There's a part of that, yes. But the students who want to come to me for lessons do want to improvise, so they're not scared of it like a lot of classical musicians are. I mean, classical players who are just playing classical, if you ask them to improvise, not all of them, but some of them are liable to panic and have no idea of what to do. But people who've actually decided to start doing it are going to have to give the rope away and have a crack at it. And, they want to, so they will eventually find a way, I think.
Step out and see
push
what
away,
happens.
Push away from the shore, as Henry James said.
You know? And then swim,
mm-hmm.
and get there. Now, you don't actually do a whole...
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
Feel that you're doing anything different, because people that I get compared with most frequently are Bill Evans and Keith Jarrett. So if I go and play standards, it'll be like, oh, it's an Evans Jarrett thing. Now, I'm bored with that comparison. And while I admire those players enormously, I don't wish to be constantly sort of trying to hang on to their coattails. It's not what I'm about. So I'd rather play my music. I don't get the same feeling playing standards as I get playing something that I've made myself. I just don't feel as involved with it or as interested. And I mean, I can do it, and there will be occasions when I do, but it's not, if I'm making the music I want to make, it'll be something that I'm either making up right now or that I wrote recently.
and then reinterpreting again.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Always trying to bring something new out of it and make something slightly different.
So you're really always challenging yourself.
You should be doing that with standards too. If I were to play standards, I'd want that to be the same. I want them to be different each time and do things with them. But it's just that it's really difficult to get away from this nagging sense that these guys have got that stuff down, and that's what you're obviously trying to do, which is not...
Trying to do something quite different.
Hopefully, yeah.
Our guest here on Bent Notes tonight is Melbourne pianist and composer Tim Stevens. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9 when our guest is Melbourne pianist and composer Tim Stevens. We just heard a piece of music there from his brand new album, I'll Tell You Later, in December, and that piece was called Postlude. It's actually the last piece on that particular album. Now, Tim, that is your latest program, latest project called I'll Tell You Later in December. Is it late enough now in December so you can talk to us about it?
Of course. I'd
excellent.
Be delighted.
How do you describe that album?
Well, it's Christmas music that I met when I was very, very young and that has stayed very special to me and that I'm inclined to listen to at this time of year. Pieces that I either heard in church or sang myself as a chorister or were played on records around my family home. So stuff that I've known for yonks. You know, very precious to me in my Christmas experience.
And you've taken them and then worked around them to create
the
album.
Well, that particular piece is a Bach chorale prelude, Non Comme des Hardin Highland, which Pierre Riccio Busoni transcribed for piano. So it's just the Bach. There's nothing of me in that. It's just entirely his music. And Busoni's transcription is a beauty, I think, because it doesn't mess too much with what's in the original score. But in other selections, I have improvised with the pieces that I've used in various ways, linking one piece to another piece or working out from or towards a piece or whatever, just seeing how I go.
When you had the idea in your mind to move forward with your memories of Christmas, mm-hmm. how did you decide how you were going to treat the pieces?
Well, that's a good question. Thank you. I don't really know how much thought I did give that because I've done free improvisation where I've got no plans at all and I just start playing. And then, of course, I play over pieces that I've written where I've got chord changes or forms or whatever. In this case, I feel I know this music so well because I've known it for so long that I can just play with it. So I start from wherever I am and I introduce bits and pieces of it and then draw them together and present the piece when I'm ready. But I don't think a lot beforehand, I don't think. And I played the program on Thursday night in Sydney and I just went to the stage and started. I know I'm going to do the program pretty much as it is in the record, same pieces, same order, but I'm not going to play the same improvisations because, well, I couldn't and I wouldn't want to, but I'll start here and here's a bit of the tune and we'll see where we go. That's the adventure. That's what I love about improvising. I don't know what's going to happen, but when something comes up that you can work with, it's so exciting and you think, great, let's just have a look at this for a minute.
And is there something about the fact that these are melodies and arrangements that you have so many fond memories of from years ago that helps you to improvise over the top?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I'm very comfortable with the music. I know it backwards, you know. It's stuff I've had in my heart forever.
Now, this is the second album that starts with the words, I'll tell you later.
It is.
What's the significance of I'll tell you later?
Oh, I just asked this question recently too. It's funny because when I was a kid, we lived at St. Peter's Eastern Hill and it was great fun time and I was very, very young. And that's where a lot of this music comes from for me because the musical tradition there was very, very strong and John O'Donnell was leading the choir and playing the organ in the 70s and he's an absolute genius. So some of the music started there, but there were people in the congregation there, really funny, beautiful, lovely, lovely people who were sort of inclined to the salacious gossip and so forth. So there'd be stories being told and there'd be something that'd say, oh, I'll tell you later. And I'd hear this and I'd hear people saying it and it's sort of moved into the vernacular and we say it even now, like, oh, I'll tell you later. And it just relates to that time for me and that was the only reason I used that on the first album because it was sort of something else that I'd taken from St. Peter's that wasn't at all musical.
Oh, right. And this one, of course, is I'll Tell You Later in December because it is Christmas, Advent yeah, and Christmas
right,
music.
Yes.
Did you find when you're recording the album, you did it at Pughouse, I think, didn't
you? Pughouse, yeah, both of them were at Pughouse.
When you recorded it, did you find that it affected you in ways you weren't expecting?
This one did, actually. This one was very heavy and I was surprised because I'm doing Tell You Later. It was really interesting and fun and I'd done the recital at the recital centre and stuff, so I was sort of all cool with that. But working with Christmas music was just another level of stuff and I managed to do it. But I really found that what I was working with was affecting me even more deeply than the first album, if that makes any sense.
Is that, do you think, because it is so ingrained in you from such an early age?
Yeah, and because Christmas is such an incredibly special time. I mean, it's just such a time of year and the memories of Christmas as a kid and that all feeds into it, yeah.
When is the best time to sit and listen to this album? Because I think it's, from what I've listened to it, I think it's one to listen from top to bottom without a break.
Good, thank you, I'm glad. Yeah. That's how I always want my records to be heard, although I can never know how people listen to them. But I think I put a lot of thought into track order on albums and the journey and all that sort of stuff. So I'd like people to be able to sit with this at whatever time they choose and enjoy it in its entirety. But obviously I would say any time in December would work. Or up to the Epiphany maybe on the January the 6th. Or if you want to take it to Michaelmas, you can do that. Candlemas. Yeah. Up to you really. Play it in July if you want, I don't care.
Well, why not? Because we talk about having Christmas in July, don't we?
Yes.
Now, the album you have available from your website, timstevens.com. And I love the front cover. It's a picture of leaves of a tree.
An olive tree, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same tree as on the front cover of I'll Tell You Later. But because there are no olives on the tree in December, I took some more photos of it and that's how it looks now.
Right, fair enough. Great fun putting it together?
Yeah, always.
Albeit a little different sitting down and recording something that you know so well.
No, it's great. It's fun. It's great fun. It's always fun. I mean, Nico Schoeble is the most magnificent man to work with in the studio. I've got great luck with my engineers. They're all fabulous. But playing at Pug House is great. It's just the piano and Nico and me. It's really...
Because the piano has history there, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Older piano. Nico's so proud of it. It's
come from Germany, is that right?
Indeed. Yes, it's been in his family for generations.
Yeah.
So when I play Bach on it, he talks about his grandfather playing Bach on it and how the circle's complete. And it's lovely. It's really, really cool. I like it.
Very much so. Tim, thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to us here on Bent Notes about I'll Tell You Later in December, Christmas music for improvisation for solo piano. We've got a piece to listen to off the album to go out with called Little One. What's the story behind Little One?
Well, it's a Bach chorale, O Jesu Lein Süß, O Jesu Lein Mild, which I remember from when I was very, very young. And it appears in the Riemenschneider edition of Bach chorales as a melody with figured bass, so I'm filling out the rest of it and I just do some improvising with bits and pieces of it beforehand. I started when I recorded this by trying to play over the changes of the chorale, but it sounded absolutely horrible. So I was very depressed about that and I went and played something else. Then I came back to it and thought, if I just, I'll allude to it, I'll play bits and pieces, I'll just work with what I can. And it worked out much better. I was very happy after that.
Amazing.
So here it is.
You work through your own improvisational development as you go.
Even in the course of a session.
TimStevens.com.au is the place to find a whole lot of information about Tim, not just about this project, but many, many other projects as well, as everything else is happening from Tim's musical life. Tim, I look forward to hearing more from Tim Stevens in the future. Please do come back and say hello.
I'd love to.
In the meantime, let's have a listen to Little One on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.